Hi, and welcome to the Saxophone Academy podcast. I'm Dr. Wally Wallace.
And I'm Dr. Susan Fanter.
And today, Dr. Sue, we're going to talk about...
We're going to talk about practice motivation.
What?
Yeah.
Can I borrow some?
Yeah, sure.
Dr. Sue, it is Wednesday? It's Wednesday where we are. It is rainy, but yeah. Things are green.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying the greenness.
Yeah. Beautiful spring weather.
How's your week going?
Great.
Wait.
So it's
all right,
Wednesday.
Bye, everyone.
It's Wednesday, so I'm here talking to Wally. Dr. Wally.
Yeah.
It's always a great day when I'm here talking to you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, I had a rough day on Monday.
Oh, so what happened?
I don't really want to talk about it.
Well,
then
maybe
you
shouldn't have brought that up.
Okay, I know, right?
But now people are like, well, you can't just like...
My Duke students know what I'm talking about. I will say no more.
Did you lay into those little turds?
Maybe a little.
Oh, man.
I had a little bit of a come to Jesus.
Oh, and whole notes.
Tell us about, yes, right.
Tell I us got about to meet, so big shout out to the Clover Saxophone Quartet and a whole big host of high school and middle school students in South Carolina. I was in Newberry, South Carolina, cute little town this weekend.
Fabulous.
At the first annual Newberry Saxophone Festival, host Dr. Barry McGinnis at Newberry College. I was a clinician. Dr. Jonathan Knopfsinger was a clinician from the University of Alabama. And we gave master classes and had a saxophone choir, and it was just a blast.
That sounds so fun. What'd you play?
I don't remember. No, that's a story for another time. So I actually, for the performance, I played what we're going to be releasing, the Handel transcription you did.
Great.
And you know what? I think it's about a third too low.
Really?
For performance. As I was playing, I was like, this just isn't, it's pleasant. It's a good student piece. But I was thinking the whole time I was playing, I was like, this should be a third higher. And the reason that I think that is that I'm doing a Bach sonata with my friend Ben Blosan.
Yeah.
And so we like put it in MuseScore and then we just like printed it out in every possible key. Not everyone, but like we made some guesses.
Right.
And we found one and we just looked at each other and we're like, this sings. And it was really good. So I don't know.
Cool.
So I may want to tinker with that a little bit. But the performance was fine. This is related to our topics today and your soapbox, which I'm excited for. Stick around for Dr. Sue's soapbox.
Oh my gosh.
It's a good one.
I'll try not to rant.
But I had just the best time talking with students and you know what? You know what? There were people, you know what they wanted with me?
What?
Selfies.
Aww,
there were high school students.
You're famous. It
was the nicest thing.
Isn't that fun?
And so I thought like, man, the high school kids are going to think, they have no idea who I am. They don't care. And so they're all kind of sitting there quiet, looking at their shoes when it's my turn to give a masterclass. And finally, one of the high school girls like, yeah, this guy's obsessed with your videos. And like, shut up. No, I'm not. And like, and like they had all, like they knew who I was. And they were Saxophone Academy fans, a lot of them.
Of course they were.
And it was just the neatest thing. Because when I'm in my basement, my family is so not impressed. My dogs, they hate the saxophone. So it's nice to get out in the real world, work with real students. And it was a lot of fun. And I will tell you, Jonathan Knopfsinger, okay, so this was a humbling moment. So not only did it this great masterclass on articulation, have you ever heard of Laure articulation?
Laure, yeah.
Laure. You look at me like I'm like, yeah, Wally, I know what up and down is. And, these terms that like, I never thought of it that way. It's just an amazing masterclass. And then I was giving a masterclass on jazz improv. And as I was speaking, I was like, so if we're playing rhythm changes, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he just walks over to the piano and starts comping for me.
How cool is
that? And then I was
like,
so if we were playing, and I was joking, like, you know, so, but then if we're playing like How High the Moon, where the 2/5s are transition materials, and he just starts playing.
I had no idea.
And I was like, I'm feeling rather insecure, okay. But he couldn't have been kinder. Great time. But it's great to be back in the studio in the comfort of my own home.
Yeah.
With stretchy pants. And
right.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like the Zoom era again.
Like by the end of that day, I was like, it was just so much fun. My feet hurt.
I was going to say, your shoes, right?
Yeah,
your
I was wearing feet. Doc Martens for 48 hours and like, nope, I need to be back in my slippers.
That's awesome.
I'm a hobbit at heart. I'm not going to lie. Like I hated touring when I was with the Army band. We would tour quite a bit in support of, because we were the band for that area. And I hated it. I was like, I don't want to sleep in a hotel. Oh man, we're going to go to the casino. I don't want to go to a casino.
Right.
I don't watch Doctor Who with my wife. Like,
right. Yeah. You got to live out of a suitcase and all that kind of
stuff. No thanks. I love being home.
Yeah. Home's good.
And when Gandalf comes around, I go, go away, you bearded weirdo. I don't want an adventure. We've got pie here. Today's topic, you brought up this idea, and it was certainly true for me this past weekend. A little bit of the fear of God.
Yeah.
Is great for practice motivation. What do you mean?
So very often we get asked, how do I keep motivated to practice? And we've mentioned this before, but I thought it was worth elaborating a bit.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do, in my opinion, if you want to be motivated to practice, is have a gig.
Yeah.
Have some performance. It doesn't have to... Yeah.
Define gig.
I'm going to do that.
Because I knew you were going to.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a paid professional gig. It could be a gathering of friends in your living room that you're going to play for, you know.
That's called a hootenanny.
A hootenanny.
Yeah.
House music.
Book a hootenanny.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you go to a church and you have a connection, if you want to do a little recital with piano in your church, that starts to step it up and be kind of formal.
Yeah.
Or get some friends together and... you're all going to play together and decide on some music to play. Maybe you're going to sit down and play some quartets together.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Anything. Just, you know, one of the benefits of having private saxophone lessons is at the very least, you're motivated by the fact that you don't want to make a embarrassment of yourself in front of your private
and getting us out of that comfort zone. As a matter of fact, yeah. So
play for somebody, play for your spouse and kids if you can get them to sit.
My business partner, who I do work with online, Andrew Simpson, owner of Vert Design Studios, the lead designer of Vert Design Studios.
Yeah,
I work with him on saxophone.
Yeah,
because originally it was just, you know, like I wanted to get to know. So yeah, saxophone lessons. But now I'm like, well, he's my business partner. He's got to play saxophone better than he does. So I give him lessons. But one of the things I found, we found motivating was like, hey, you know, our friend Andy Smith from the Nexus Quartet.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I hooked him up with a lesson with you know, was so kind and just like had him over and then gave him a gratis lesson.
Yeah.
But it's like that getting outside your comfort zone and just setting up a one-shot thing with someone, even if you have to drive an hour, but it's once every other month.
Yeah. Set up, you know, a rehearsal where you decide on repertoire that you're going to play. You don't even have to have an audience if you don't want. Just organize some situation that forces you to practice some music and be ready to play for somebody else in some setting, however informal, however formal, whatever your connections are, any idea that occurs to you, you know, follow up on it and just set up some performances.
You know, we have a cat cafe in Greensboro. Were you aware of that?
I know. Isn't that
fun?
There's
a cafe with cats.
Yeah.
Now, I'm thinking, like, these got to be really sad. Probably, like, foster cats. Probably, like, you know, those one-eyed cats or those cats that are a little gimpy and, like, cats in diapers and, like, you know. And, like, go play for the cats.
Go play for the cats.
You know, those are the cats you want to play for, not the humans that call themselves cats.
Right.
But don't play for those cats. Play for the actual, you know, that sweet little, you know, cat that's on its last leg. Like, literally, it's down to one working leg. And play for that cat. I'm sure the cat cafe would be happy to have you.
The cat cafe might be. The cats might all run away. But like local bookstores, some bookstores have performance series. They can be pretty informal. They can be fairly formal too.
Yeah.
You know, a library.
I've enjoyed playing libraries before with my saxophone quartet. And that was where I learned the word honorarium. Now, Dr. Sue.
That's actual money.
Woo-hoo! What is an honorarium?
Well, an honorarium is usually a small amount of money for a gig. Because if it's more, then you call it a fee.
Right. So, but I got to say, it's like an undergraduate college kid. It's like, holy cow, $100 for playing the saxophone.
Right?
This is sweet.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. I think I told you about this organization Mark and I used to play saxophone duos for called Arts Unlimited in like the Chicagoland area when we were first married. This was a few years ago. But we would go to some kind of a, you know, retirement community or nursing home. And for $50 total, not even each, $50, we would go and play, you know, a half hour of saxophone duos.
That sounds like...
It was fun.
$50 for a half hour?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
I mean, dinner.
That's
actually
that's
half a
good.
Week of groceries back in the day.
I play saxophone for a half hour for free all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And so we used to do that. But, you know, you could say, you could take the attitude, well, you know, we can just kind of, quote unquote, phone it in, just play something nonchalant, you know, don't even bother having a good read and go play for these people that can't hear anyway. You could take that attitude, but we never took that attitude. We always took the attitude of, let's find some music that will be appropriate for that audience, that will be fun for us to play, because we want to have fun and we want the audience to have fun and we want to connect.
Right.
And the motivation to practice was there because we didn't want to go and just like be lousy.
Right.
First of all, we wouldn't be asked to back. And second of all, that doesn't feel good to show up
and
not play well.
And the cats don't have much longer.
And the cats don't have those much cats, longer.
You know, I mean, their organs are shutting down and like they need a good. So this kind of dovetails that we'll get to your soapbox. And yeah. Sue's soapbox. Yeah. That'll be one of our new segments. So just scheduling something. I think scheduling a lesson with someone who's not your teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Do you mind if a Duke student went and took a lesson with someone else?
I don't mind.
Okay.
If that teacher tells them that everything I said was wrong and they come back and I have to like fight to get them to play correctly again, I'm not going to be real happy. But hey, that's their right to go take a lesson with another teacher.
I've had a teacher not recently that was very territorial. And if they found out, it was like I took a lesson with a university in another state and I had to keep it dead secret, quiet, out of great fear. And I told the person, I was like, if you wouldn't mind, please don't mention that I'm doing this. Yeah. And they're like, oh, who do you study with? And I told them like, oh yeah, I won't say anything.
Yeah.
Because the person was very territorial and it stems, I think, from insecurity.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, Sue? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I just think that when you're studying with a teacher, my MO as a student is always to do whatever my teacher is telling me to do. So if I go and I take a lesson with somebody and they ask me to try a bunch of stuff that's different from what my other teacher is telling me, I just try it.
Yeah.
Because what am I, what's the point of being there if I'm going to push back? So when I get students that push back against what I'm trying to tell them.
Then argue.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like, well, why are you here if you're just going to like argue with me?
I quit doing,
you're not going to change my opinion if you don't like my opinion. Go someplace else.
When I actually, when I occasionally would do a internet private lesson back when my YouTube channel was taking off. And so internet randos.
Oh, yeah.
Would be like, hey, can I have a lesson? And like, I just kept upping the price because it wasn't worth my time. Oh my God, this is the most arrogant thing I've ever said.
No, you have
but
to.
But like,
you
my
have
time
to
is better spent creating content. So
always say with the pricing, Wally, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just got to say with the pricing, I have found over the years, and maybe this is like stupidly obvious and I'm an idiot that I didn't think of it sooner, but just find a price that makes you so you don't hate doing it. Find a price where you enjoy doing it. It's like, oh, well, you know, for X number of dollars, okay, I don't really enjoy this work, but I don't mind it for that price. Just find that price.
So I was up to about $125 an hour.
Yeah, great.
Because YouTube, you know, allows you to do that.
Yeah.
And what I found is they hated it because the guys that could afford to do that or that really wanted to would also spend half the time just like anytime I'd say something. Well, George Garzone told me that. Well, so-and-so told me. Well, like, well, then go study with him. Go away. Like, I'm telling you, this is my advice. It's so annoying.
Exactly.
But back to the instilling the fear of God.
I love it. Yeah.
I mean, listen to the teacher. But like, just that fear of playing for someone unknown.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. And so you want to go and really just do your best. I gave a lesson yesterday to a prospective student, a junior in high school who's thinking about applying to Duke. I won't name him, but it was just fun.
Go ahead and give their address.
It was so fun to
Mother's
work.
Maiden name?
he came in and you could tell that he had really practiced hard to try to, you know, play well because he doesn't want to, like, what's the point of paying for a lesson if you're not going to come in and play your best? Because the teacher can't do their best teaching unless you're doing your best playing.
Say that again, but slower.
Your teacher can't do their best teaching if you haven't done your best playing.
Right. I find in the very rare instances where I do one-on-one work, even the people that I'm fairly comfortable with, they still get nervous playing in front of me. And it's understandable being who I am. Kidding. Yes, exactly. No, kidding aside. But so what I do is I have them run through it first and say, all right, then let's just do it again. And I don't even really pay attention the first time. Then I start paying attention the second time. When they're finally relaxed and start to be more who they are. Do your students still get kind of nervous in front of you in the studio?
I'd have to ask them. Probably not.
You need to yell more.
I know.
I think we need like a persona. Have you seen 101 Dalmatians?
No.
Well, you know, Cruella de Vil.
Yeah.
You know, she wears a coat of Dalmatian or dogs or whatever.
Right.
So what if you wore a coat of undergraduate I don't know. I don't know what the equivalent would be without being like very creepy. But I just think you need a little bit of a persona to strike that fear into your students.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It's hard when your students are all non-music majors and you have to strike that balance between like being demanding enough that it's worth their time to work and take lessons with you, but nice enough that you don't drive them away because not a one of them is required to take saxophone lessons.
Yeah. Oh, you class one research institution. With what do you call the schools like that?
I don't know.
Yeah,
All I know is, like, my students are, I have, you know, a couple of students who perhaps minor in music and the rest are non-majors. Yeah. And so I just, hats off to them that they continue to practice and take lessons and want to get all the musical experience they can while they're in college, even though that's not their intended profession.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
That is very cool. You know what's also cool?
What's cool?
The mailbag. I have a question because we didn't get into it last time. This is from William.
William,
and then we're going to get to your soapbox. I just got a Yanni SW01, and so far I really like it. I want to know what your setup is. I want to sound similar to John Coltrane, something that's nasal and oboe-ish. What are your recommendations from coming close to that sound?
I have no idea what Coltrane's setup was. Do you know?
I believe it was a metal autolink.
Okay.
I believe the Supertone Masters, but for soprano, if I'm not mistaken. But regardless of that,
yes.
What is the correct answer?
I do not know.
I mean, the teacher answer. So the question is, I will look it up. I will talk to someone smarter than us, which means I can just open the door and yell out. Hey, Larry, stop mowing your lawn. What was just looking for the pictures. I believe it's an autolink Supertone Master.
Yeah, sure.
For soprano. But more important than what the mouthpiece is, how do you get, if you want to get that kind of very focused sound like Coltrane?
You want to sound like Coltrane?
How do you do that, Sue?
Well, I'm going to presume that, first of all, you've listened to Coltrane and you know what the sound
William
is.
William has, no question.
Okay.
Okay.
How do you sound like Coltrane? Just sound like Coltrane.
Moved to High Point, North Carolina. Yeah,
there you go.
Just let me, that'll be, let's put that on t-shirts. How do you sound like Coltrane? Just sound like Coltrane, said Dr. Susan Fancher.
Just do it.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to let you answer that one. Well, I really don't know.
Well, which is funny, when I think of nasal, that's the exact opposite of your soprano saxophone. What is your soprano setup?
My soprano setup, for classical, is an SL3 with an MO ligature and a Van Doren number 3 reed. It's as inside the box as you can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, like, if there were more inside of the box, it would, yeah. That's,
yeah. That's like just classic saxophone.
If someone said, well, I want a medium reed, medium mouthpiece, boom.
There you go.
This is vanilla.
And, yep.
Yeah, that's a pumpkin spice latte wearing Uggs kind of setup.
You know what's funny?
It's basic.
People say to me all the time, Wally, oh my gosh, I love your soprano sound.
Modest.
That's what they say.
Okay.
And I'm always like, and they'll say, I want to sound like you. And what do you play on then? And I tell them what I play on. They're like, oh yeah, I don't want to play on that stuff. happens all the time. No, I'm not joking. All the time.
So I
just like throw up my hands. I'm like, well, okay, you asked. That's what I play on. So go find something better to play on. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like 90% of your sound is you.
Well, and that's what I was going to go.
Yeah,
William,
man.
I think, yes. And first of all, like getting, finding the equipment that your hero used.
Yeah.
And it's fun to try it out. And that's cool. But I will say just a transcription, playing along. So put on, My Favorite Things, where he's got that great soprano in a variety of registers.
Oh, man.
And just play along. And then the subconscious mind starts to make the body do those things. You'll start to adopt the voicing, which is far more important. Because if I'm fairly, oh gosh, hold on. You keep talking while I Google John Coltrane saxophone mouthpiece.
I think here's a related story, Wally, that I think I've told in the past.
Tell it slowly while I Google this.
I'm sorry to repeat. So those of you who listen to the podcast are like, she already told that story. But when I was in a church choir in Buffalo, New York, at Westminster Church, there was a woman who sang. I always stood next to her when we were singing in choir, and she just had such a beautiful sound. And I said to her once, how do you have such a beautiful sound? And she looked at me and she said, well, just imagine the sound you want and just make it come out of your mouth. And it's a little bit like, imagine the sound and just make it. You know,
that was kind of
my snarky comment a few minutes ago was like, but you're getting at something that's a little more systematic. So put on a recording of John Coltrane if you want to sound like John Coltrane, and then just play along with it and figure out how to voice that way, lip pressure, tongue position, all of that mess,
Right.
Just try to sound like that.
Or, more importantly, yes, you could buy a Selmer Metal E-facing.
Is that what he played on?
According to the internet dorks, which have a lot more time and interest in this sort of stuff. So, unfortunately, what that means, if you want to play a John Coltrane mouthpiece, now that everyone knows that's what Coltrane used, and now that it's on the forums, everyone's going to be buying the E-facing from eBay.
Yeah, you got to go fast.
So, if it's a Selmer Metal piece, were those round chambers?
I think so.
I think, yeah, just like a round chamber.
I think they're pre the squared chamber.
And it's just not even that different from the Tone Master, the auto link, the round medium tip opening, medium round chamber.
You know, Hemke played on a metal C-Star.
Yeah, and he sounded beautiful. Yeah. I think he dropped it for a while, like in the 80s and 90s, and then went back to it, I think.
I think so, because the last I remember when I was studying with him, you know, in the 80s, obviously I was 12 then.
I wouldn't bore him.
I love it.
Yeah. So, So William, apparently we know it's a metal. It's really a classically geared mouthpiece. Those metal Selmers.
Yeah.
But it's all in the voicing and the approach.
I mean, what was the read? Who knows, right? Does it?
I don't want to. Don't make me Google that.
No, I'm
not
gonna.
I don't want to Google.
He can Google it.
Yeah.
And what was the ligature? You know, that stuff matters. But you know, like we said, 90% of the sound is the imagination of the player.
Right. And the other 10%, you can be found in my PDF of Tone Secrets. You can buy for $19.95, a one-time downloaded. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, so that's an answer. So speaking of the fear of God in setting up performance to motivate our practice.
Yeah.
It leads into something that, like, I just opened the door and you started screaming at me.
I'm so sorry.
And I said, hey, Dr. Sue, how are you? She just
Let
went off.
Let me tell you.
So something got stuck in your, what's a craw anyway?
I don't even know.
But like, I don't want to, if it's rude to say something.
I don't know. Yeah, that's an expression. But I don't, you better not say it.
I don't say, I don't know. Like, I don't, yeah, don't say expression.
Okay. I saw, but there are so many expressions we say and then I think, whoa. What does that actually mean? That could be really offensive.
I know.
So let's right? not do it. Let's not do it. We'll get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me personally, and I know it's true for you too, Wally, if you really want to feel some pressure to practice, some people don't want to feel pressure to practice. They want to practice just kind of nonchalantly for fun. For me, if I don't have gigs, I really don't like to practice. I know that's kind of a weird thing to say as a professional musician. I don't mind practicing and I do practice because I have to practice, but there are lots of things I would rather do than practice. It's not like my go-to thing when I'm bored. That's not what I do. I practice because I care about playing well at least playing the best that I can, whether or not it's well, you know, I'll let the audience judge and the other people, but.
No, that makes a lot of sense to me. When you think like, well, if you don't like practicing, you don't love music. No. It's like saying I wouldn't enjoy constantly hitting the ball machine and working in my my tennis stroke if I never played an opponent.
Right.
It's the game that you love. And so in the saxophone world, part of performing is an audience.
Yeah.
That's part of making music, especially at our level. So it makes complete sense. And it's not like shallow or anything or means that you don't love the music. It's just like you have to look forward to that full experience of collaboration, not only with other musicians, but with the audience. It's a very different thing.
And, you know, I always have some kind of a level of, you know, activity going on. There's always something that I'm preparing for. It's either a rehearsal or it's a concert. And sometimes the pace is a little slower. Sometimes it's a little more intense. And it's, you know, it's pretty heavy sometimes when it's intense and there's a lot on the music stand. Right now, it's sort of medium, so it's nice. So I can go back to really making sure I dig into my warm-up and work on fundamentals, get that embouchure and vibrato and stuff back in shape. But anyway, I'm definitely motivated by performances. And I learned that very clearly during the pandemic because I had no rehearsals, hardly, and no performances, and I had no motivation to practice.
Yeah.
So
I was really I was really disappointed in you back then.
I know you were.
You know, it was just,
I know you stopped speaking to me and everything.
I thought she was an artist.
Yeah.
And I thought it was self-inherent.
I know it, right?
No kidding.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm back, Wally.
But that leads to your actual soapbox.
Yeah, my actual soapbox is I have learned.
Well, first of all, throw a Duke student under the bus that prompted all this.
Well,
someone set you off. What happened, Dr. Sue?
I have a performance that is coming up in a few weeks that I'm doing together with some of my students.
Okay.
And I feel like they are not taking it as seriously as I am taking it. And I'm a little sad about mm-hmm. that. And so we had to have a little, as we call it, come to Jesus moment mm-hmm. on Monday. And I'm sorry if they're listening and I don't want them to feel bad because I think
they don't listen.
Good. I think that they're going to bring it and it's going to be fine. They're going to bring their A game in the end.
It will be brought in.
Yeah, it'll be brought in, let me tell you. But I just can't imagine. I don't want my students to ever show up for a performance thinking that it doesn't matter because they play better than the other people. Or it doesn't matter because, oh, it's just a nursing home. Or it doesn't matter because it's just little kids. Or it doesn't matter just...
Because a lot of these cats have already lost their sight and hearing.
Right. Yeah. So it doesn't matter that the kitty cats won't be happy.
Right.
Yeah. I don't see why you would do...
You phrased this under taking music seriously, I believe, yeah. in the email, which yeah. it was all caps. It was yeah. like double caps, this email to me.
So it may come as a surprise for me to say this to people who listen to this podcast, but occasionally you and I joke around and laugh.
What?
Right. And goof around and, you know, just kind of say ridiculous, funny things. At least some people think they're funny. Maybe some people think they're terrible. Yeah. Whatever. I don't care. But, right. you know, we goof off and we want to have fun with this subject. But when it's all said and done, we are very serious about music. We're serious about how important it is to the world and to humanity. I know that right. sounds very lofty and full of hubris, but this is a really important art form. And we're serious about playing the best that we can. And we're serious about preparing as diligently as we possibly can and doing our very best. We're serious about researching the music we play and making sure that we're making intelligent decisions about phrasing and structure and paying attention to intonation and articulation and all of the stuff we talk about. We're actually really serious about this, you know, all goofing aside. And so when somebody's just walking out on stage, you know, and they're kind of like, I'm going to kind of phone it in or bring my B game, as I call it, or, you know, just doing half of their full effort, I find that a little disappointing. And so when I got a hint of my students kind of thinking it was okay to not prepare ahead of time and really dig in, it was a little disheartening. So we had to have a little discussion about that.
Right. I think, as I told you earlier, that I think the disconnect with some of my students or our beloved listeners is that we don't take ourselves seriously. Right. We take the music very seriously.
Right.
So I will make fun of myself and my failures and all the goofy stuff that I do or can't do as well as I would like. Yeah. But we have an abiding passion and seriousness for the music.
Yeah.
And I think, and sometimes I think I need to be careful because you're exactly right. For the non-professional musician, it could seem like we're not taking it seriously. Sometimes I go so far the other way because I dealt with music majors for so long and having been a music major and a graduate student, where we tied our entire self-esteem up with our music making. And I remember that if I had a bad performance, I thought I was just human filth. And I hated my life. I felt like just utterly depressed because I performed badly. Thus, my entire self-worth was wrapped up in my ability to perform music. And if a competition didn't go my way, I was in the dumps. If I won a competition, I felt great.
Yeah.
And so I think separating that. So sometimes I go far the other way because I'm coming from the place of someone that took it so seriously it affected mental health on every level and my own identity.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. Now we have a much more relaxed relationship with ourselves.
Yeah.
But we still take the music very seriously. As a matter of fact, when we were rehearsing the song Chalet together, which we need to do again because I want to record that.
Yep.
I was having fun.
Me too.
Sue looked like she had a migraine the whole time. So that hurt.
I'm just kidding. I rubbed my forehead.
She just kind of looked very serious and rubbed her forehead. But while we were rehearsing,
was so fun.
It was very like, oh, let's play it like this. No. It was like very much like, all right, let's try this one this way, this articulation, this phrase. What do you think of that? And like, it was very like intensely serious, not unfun, but intensely serious because we both really want to do the music justice.
Yeah. And that is the bottom line. You want to really feel that you're really operating in the service of the music.
Yeah.
As a performer, I feel like the first and most important thing is that I'm doing justice to the music. And the second most important thing is that I'm finding some way to connect with the audience.
Right.
And those are, that's really about it. And I feel like we get all up, you know, in our heads being worried about being judged and not being good enough. And I mean, I said this earlier before we started recording, and I hope it doesn't hurt anybody's feelings, but here's a news flash. There's always
Don't you say that, Sue Fancher.
Except for Wally, who is the best. There is always somebody better than us, than you. Not you, Wally.
Yeah.
You listener. I'm sorry. You know, you may think that you are the best saxophonist in the world, and maybe you are, but for most of us, there's always somebody better. There's actually always somebody less accomplished too. So if you compare yourself with others, you're either going to be vain or, you know, just really depressed. So just stop it.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
It is. That's great. Yeah. So just stop comparing yourself with others, because it's not about that. It's about connecting to the audience and making the music sing.
Yeah. Homer Simpson actually said, no matter how good you get at something, there's always a million people better.
Yep.
So why try? Oh. That's actually the Homer Simpson quote.
Okay, well.
I forgot what he was doing, where he was really good at something, but yeah.
That's depressing.
It is. I'm very much detached from my ability to perform it. Like, I don't mind messing up. I think it's kind of funny. But it's always because that's a way for me to take the pressure off myself.
Yeah.
But I always, of course, want to do the music justice. Yeah. So I need to be careful with that with students, because they know I joke a lot.
Yeah. Me too.
But that's, I think, to help lure some of my students out of their place of, I play bad, thus I am a bad person.
Yeah.
And so, like, some students have to say, like, hey, let's make some ugly sounds. Let's have a laugh. This isn't life or death. It's a tremendous privilege.
Yes.
No.
And, you know, once you've done the work to choose good music, learn to play it to the best of your ability, you've really done the best that you can. Once you get out there to perform, you should enjoy yourself and you should have fun. And what I call live music moments are going to happen. If you start messing something up, instead of dwelling on the things you're messing up, you can say, okay.
You can say, look what I can mess up in the future.
You could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You say, okay, I messed that up. I can only control what's happening right now at the moment. So I don't have to keep messing up just because I did mess up. So just pull it together and do better. You're a human being. I would like to say that Michael Phelps did not swim the world record time every time he went into the pool. You know?
Yeah, probably not.
So, I mean, just go out there and enjoy yourself and be charming. And it's really about the audience at that point, because you've done your work.
It's not about the composer? I think it's about the composer. I think.
I'm kidding.
No.
And I feel like I'm less nervous if I did everything in my power to prepare.
Right.
I'm less nervous because I did the best I could.
That, you know, I am the most nervous when you're getting up on stage and it's like, I could have done a little bit more work on this.
Yeah.
I mean, this course has never happened.
It's never happened to me either. Well, No. Never get
but
out there and think,
I
should have started.
I knew a guy once.
Yeah,
that
me too.
Gave a performance.
Yeah, should have started practicing earlier.
Yeah, or like, you know, you ever do this thing where like you're on stage and you're like, you know that section where I thought like, it'll work itself out? It's not going to work
itself. It doesn't work itself out. It's more likely the stuff you thought you had down cold that flies off.
See this lick? That's tomorrow Wally's problem. He's going to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to do to punish your Duke students for not taking this seriously? What are you going to do to just really
I can't think of anything. What am I going to do, Wally? No.
So if you're a podcast listener, and if you stuck around this point, let us know. How should Sue punish her students? You should see the true care and love she has for her students at Duke, which is why I can joke about this. But yeah.
No, the truth is I am 100% sure that these guys are going to pull it together and the performance is going to be fine. The performance would be better if they had started sooner.
Started working sooner.
If they had started working sooner.
Okay, don't make the performance sooner. Don't like
No. Yeah, if they had like dug in sooner, we would be able to get to more fine tuning. But because I know how talented and hardworking these guys are, I know they're going to scramble and it's going to be fine.
I'm not so sure.
It's going to be fine.
I don't know.
I think it's going to be fine. I'll report back. We'll report back.
Report back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so where is the performance?
Durham, it's in Durham, North Carolina at the public library.
Oh, I love library gigs. Yep.
April 20th, part of the Malyar May family concert series.
Okay, so, and the great thing about his library is they're flush with that honorarium money.
There's an honorarium.
Sweet, sweet honorarium checks. Usually in a couple of zeros. Two, to be precise. Two zeros. But...
Are you talking about the ones that are after the
one
after the decimal point?
In my experience playing libraries, there's an honorarium and there's a one and two zeros, and then a decimal and then two more and 00100.
But it's not really about the money. That was kind of
actually when I was an undergraduate, it was very much about the money. Like
oh yeah,
that's a lot of ramen. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so good to see you.
It's good to see you.
Well, I see you next week.
Yeah.
I don't know if I will.
We'll look at the calendar.
We'll look at the calendar. My kids are on spring break next week.
Oh, we may have to take a break.
So,
yeah, maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah. But yeah. I'll look and we'll get together then. And if you have a question for the podcast,
make sure
you write us.
Yeah.
You can email it to me because you don't get Sue's email address. Nope. You haven't earned it. But you can email me and I'll forward it to her. Wally at the Saxophone Academy.
You know, .com.
I haven't finished sending the email address. Let me.
Do it again.
You can email me, Wally at the Saxophone Academy. No, Sue. Swear to God.
You can write it on a $50 bill and send it to us.
Send it to me.
But Jim said, he doesn't have our address, so he couldn't send his question on the $50 bill.
Jim,
oh my gosh.
We need
a P.O. box.
Yeah, I was about to say there's zero chance of giving out my address. Like zero chance.
Zero chance.
Zero chance, no.
You can just send it to Wally, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Yeah, that'll get to me. Yeah. All right, everybody, take the music seriously. Book a performance.
Yeah.
And once you book the performance, let us know. Send us an email and say like, hey, I'm taking your advice. Or book a lesson with the local teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
awesome.
You know,
let us know.
Set up a trial. Let us know how it goes. And if you felt scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's good for you.
Well, fear is not bad.
No, it trains the nervous system. We realize this is not fatal.
Right.
Which is important. I will see you soon, Sue.
Go practice.
Don't yell at me to go practice. Bye, go practice, everyone. Go practice.